the way that these tend to work for people that don't know what goes on behind the scenes, because there's only me behind the scenes, I tend to cluster recordings. So I've just come from a recording with an American who used to live in the UK but now lives in Finland. And I'm now on a call with definitely not a French Canadian who is in French Canada. So we'll get into the specifics of your geography at some point. But the first question we always start off with is just how you found photography. So what was it that made you pick up a camera for the first time and made you want to be a photographer?
Well, my background is classical ballet. I was a ballet dancer since I remember myself. And after immigrating to Canada, I was working in a small ballet company, and I was just wasn't happy anymore doing ballet, you know. And I picked up a camera just as a hobby, and a couple of years later, it completely consumed me, you know. It just became what started as a creative outlet. It grew into a full-time, lifelong passion.
So what is it about photography that grabbed you? Is it the process of actually taking the pictures? Was it the pictures that you were creating? Because I know there's sort of a divide. There's photographers that are very focused on the shoot, and there's photographers that are very focused on the shot. So which are you?
You know, I enjoy every aspect of it. Like, even like from packing my camera and setting up for a shoot, to editing, to retouching, to sometimes to printing. I think it's like the lifestyle of being a photographer. I mean, I just love being able to do what I want all day, basically.
I mean, that's a pretty good reason to like it. So I first found you through a series. I go through these sort of excavations of Instagram. I go through lots of process of weeding out bad stuff from my explore page and making sure that I get lots and lots of good stuff come through so I can discover new photographers or new artists or, you know, new filmmakers or anything like that that I haven't found before, but hopefully that are in the kind of, I try and use the algorithm like a weapon for me, as opposed to the way it's kind of used by Instagram, which is a weapon against you. And I found you through a particular black and white dance image that was, to me, it was so expressive in the definition of the shadows and creating the sense of strength and sort of the muscular tension of the image. The first question about photographing ballet, I mean, you mentioned that that's where you came from. That has to be such an advantage to you to say, compared to someone like, if I were to try and photograph ballet, I would have to learn ballet to be able to photograph it correctly. You've got that previous knowledge. So how much does that help you create the images that you do of dancers?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that Instagram algorithms work to my advantage. So that's the first time I hear about it. I mean, certainly my background helps me when I photograph dancers. But as I like to say, it's my greatest strength and my greatest weakness, because I always look at that ballet photography through the prism of ballet dancer, not just the photographer, to create a unique image. So I'm always have these certain boundaries around me, which I constantly try learn to break. And I was always very inspired to see how other photographers who don't know ballet and have no ballet background photograph ballet dancers. And to me, it's like and I always like to make an example from Irvin Olof. Mm-hmm. He's a fine art photographer in Europe, and the way he photographs dancers is just like, I just love it. And I always have I never call myself a ballet photographer. I like calling myself a portrait photographer. And I always approach shooting dancers as a portrait photographer first. So I'm always interested in their personality and the way they present themselves, rather than what they can do with their bodies, you know, because in that case, it's pretty much becomes documentary, you know, just showing what dancers can do and not adding anything to the image.
Right.
If it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, with ballet and I guess any stage art form, there's the nature of it being a production, right? So it's several moving parts, no matter how small it is, there's different parts of it that are moving at the same time to create the aesthetic, to create the story, and so on. In that sense, the dancer becomes part of the production. They stand out, but they don't stand out. If they do a good job in a stage production, you don't stand out in the wrong way. You stand out in the sense of like being a great performer, but you're cohesive to the narrative, you're cohesive to the story. So with your photography, are you kind of pulling them out from that being part of the machine and you're showing them on their own? Is that kind of, you're showcasing just a person?
It really depends. So what I shoot. So we have to separate my commercial ballet photography that I do for ballet companies, for posters, advertising and marketing, and my personal work with dancers. When it comes to, commercial and poster work, my role is the artistic director comes up with the concept and what he wants for the image. And then I come up with the set, the way I'm going to light it, and I'm bringing my own aesthetics to the shot. And when I photograph my personal work with dancers, it's more of an exploration. It's more of a collaboration between me and the dancer.
I mean, you talked about lighting there, and the first thing that grabbed me about the first image of yours that I saw was the lighting and how it showed off the muscular tension and the definition of the subject. How much of a trial and error process was that for you to find the lighting that suited you for how you wanted to show a ballet dancer?
Oh, it's always every shoot I prepare for, it's always trial and error. And I always prepare in advance for every shoot, no matter what I do. Like, I have my own studio, so I have the freedom to set up and test beforehand. And a lot of it, so talking about lighting.
Because it feels like one of the things that you would want to do from a layman point of view, so I'm not involved in ballet, is you would think it needs to be beautiful in kind of a very airy sense. It needs to be light and but that would kill the definition.
Uh-huh.
So it's counterintuitive to go down the route from a layman point of view, it's counterintuitive to go down the route of being dramatic. Because you take away from the beauty, but you actually don't if you understand ballet, which is what I'm learning from seeing your images.
Oh, I don't see it. Like I never thought of ballet as something airy. Maybe like you're thinking about Swan Lake and like a bunch of swans dancing in white tutus. I always try to get images that are a bit edgy, contrasty, and I love skin. I love the definition in the body, and I like to bring that out in post-production. The lighting plays a huge part in this work.
And having something that's like side lit or very specifically lit directionally means you have to be, I'm really trying to learn as much as I can here, I guess, but you have to be very coordinated and choreographed with where the dancer ends up at the moment that you're taking that image through the process of that motion, right? So is that the case where you get them to go through a movement several times and keep adjusting light, or do you adjust the movement to the, it's a very confusing system for me. I'm very curious.
You're right on point. Yes. I would try to adjust the movement to fit my lighting. It's much easier to turn the dancer around than the host. And usually the lighting setup that I do very often is this kind of like they do in the movies. You have the highlight, then you have this transition to light, to mid-tones, to shadow and to black. So I don't like lighting from different sides, you know, like main light on one side and the room light from the opposite side. So I like this nice gradation from whites to blacks.
So how hard is it to separate yourself as a ballet performer from the images that you're taking when it comes to, say, like if you have a shoot that it's not quite working, or you're not quite getting the exact movement shot the way you want it to, Are you criticizing yourself as the photographer, or are you criticizing the ballet side of things?
Oh no, it's always me. It's always my fault. But you know what? I often have this feeling after shoots. Oh, I should have done this. I always doubt myself and second guessing every decision that I made on the shoot. But in some cases, you look back at the images and you're like, well, it wasn't that bad actually. It actually worked, and I was way too hard on myself than I should have been.
So there's a project of yours that I find absolutely fascinating, and I'd like to kind of know where it came from, where the idea came from, and the process of putting it together. So Ballet Mothers. I think the images are fantastic. I think I've not seen anything like it. So how did the idea come about, and then how did you go about executing it?
My wife. It's my wife, Anya. She's also a dancer here with the Le Grand Ballet de Montréal. And she always had this idea of photographing ballerinas who have kids. And last year, we actually had five dancers, I think. Five dancers who had children and one pregnant. And we decided to photograph. I approached the ballet company that I work for, and we pitched the idea. They're like, "Yeah, we love it. Let's do it." I think it's in ballet. Even in this day and age, it's still not all ballet companies are very progressive enough to allow ballerinas to have children, even though they're not. They allow it. It's just after there is this stereotype that ballerina, they have a child, like less of a ballerina. She's less technical and it's a stereotype. And the point of this photo shoot was just to, highlight it.
I mean, with a project like this, something that I always find kind of, it was very hard for me to get my head around when I started photography. I feel like when you see people whose work you admire, everything's going great for them. Like everything went great. Every time they pick up a camera, everything goes perfectly. There's never any problems. Nothing ever goes wrong. Nothing ever goes against the plans that you had. With something like Ballet Mothers, the end result, when you look at the photos and you think about when you first discussed the idea, how much do the photos look like the representation of the idea that you started off with?
Well, the photos turned out great. Like I was very pleased how they turned out on the shoot. I mean, every time you involve children, like 1 to 3 year old, I mean, nothing will go smoothly. So it's always stressful. They never listen. You always have to constantly negotiate and bribe them to do what you want. But the point of the shoot was to show the ballerina and to let the kids do whatever they want to do. Just never mind. If they're crying, it's fine. If they're hugging the leg, mother's leg, that was perfect. But I want the mother to look very powerful and determined, and just let the children do whatever they want. It was a very stressful photo shoot, and considering the pandemic, and we had to the distance and mask wearing and all this mess just added to the stress of it. But in the end, everything worked out.
So you do photography for commercial purposes, and 99% of people that do photography, they'll never get to that. They either don't want to, or they just will never get to the stage of doing that because it's a limited market, and it's, you know, it takes a lot of skill to get to that point, and it takes a lot of desire to get to that point. One of the things that I've had said to me previously on the podcast, and something I've talked about previously on the podcast, is when you start photographing commercially, you lose, or there's the potential to lose, a little bit of identity of yourself, because you're representing a brand, or you're representing the commercial interest, and they want something from the aesthetic that isn't entirely your vision. Is that something that's quite hard to navigate and make peace with yourself, that you're doing something for someone else? Or is that something you found quite easy?
For me, I'm at a stage where I take as much work as I can. So I don't take it very personally. Mm-hmm. When something goes not against my personal aesthetics. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to commercial work, I just, you know, I take as much as I can to photograph and to grow my business. But this is where it's important to photograph personal work. So when you're too busy doing commercial shoots, I find like I have to shoot something for myself every couple of months, mm-hmm. just to, you know, just to keep me going creatively, you know.
The antidote to the commercial work is the personal work.
Not to say that all commercial work is bad. Like I'm lucky to maybe like 80% of my commercial work that I photograph is actually what I want to be photographing. So, and I think this is just, it's a result of being very selective of what you want to photograph and just knowing what you want to photograph. And as you grow, this kind of jobs will come to you. So, and you will photograph what you want to photograph.
I mean, it helps to have a clear style because then the people that are finding you know what you do. And I think that's something that's overlooked quite a lot.
Yeah, not the style, but more style is overrated, but knowing what you want to photograph, you know, the genre. You know, I remember I was, when I was starting out, like 10 years ago, maybe I was very concerned, but, oh, I don't have a style. What's my style? And I was thinking about it constantly. And it's a huge creative block. And after a while, you know, I noticed that I stopped thinking about it. Like I don't care anymore. I like what I'm shooting. I like the direction that I'm headed, and it kind of grew organically, you know.
Yeah. Do you think it's the case that like the style is going to develop regardless? You can think about it or not think about it. The way that you do things will come through either way. So to spend your time thinking about it is a bit of a waste, and you can't really control it anyway.
No, just keep working, keep shooting, and eventually something will stick, you know.
So I'm painfully English and I have the terrible habit of always going towards the negative rather than the positive.
Oh, yeah, I'm the same.
Pessimist. I think it's a European thing. Americans tend to be very yee-haw. Outside of America, we're all a bit dour. You mentioned about sort of self-doubt. Something that constantly surprises me, and like I said earlier, when you see people that you admire, and I've been in the position to talk to a lot of photographers. I really admire their work. I wish I could just have their portfolio and that would make my life a lot simpler if I had their talent and their portfolio. But so many people have self-doubt, regardless of how good their work is. They're always trying to progress. And that self-doubt is, I mean, maybe it's indicative of them wanting to improve. That's what it is. In terms of dealing with self-doubt, especially if you're working in a commercial sense, you're being relied on to produce stuff in pressure situations. How do you hide or manage the self-doubt?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. The difference is with the thing with self-doubt is what you do with it. Do you just sit and let it take over you, or you just get up and work and try to improve and fight it and do better. I have doubt after the fact, after the shoot, mm-hmm. sometimes, but during the process, I'm pretty determined. I usually have a pretty good idea of what I want to do on a shoot. And when it comes to commercial shoots, it's, if you're talking about creating a poster for a ballet performance, right? It's usually a big team of people. It's not just up to me, you know. I'm not carrying all this pressure. There is artistic director with his vision. There is a marketing director and marketing department. They have their own vision of how the image needs to look. They need to make sure that there is room for graphics. There is a lot of negative space around, so they can crop it 100 different times. And there is me who will generally who will direct the dancer and help them to, you know, to look the best, to look their best, and to feed the narrative that the artistic director is set it to. But usually there is not a lot of, there is a time pressure, of course, but we always like to try many different things. We do one, like we can try some jumping shots, and then we can change the lighting, try something on the floor. Because for posters, I'm required to do two shots, one vertical and one horizontal. Vertical that fits the posters and banners. Horizontal is for buses or billboards on highways. When they used to print them, now not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's kind of
with pandemic, it's just they don't. It's not worth the money because you never know if the show is going to happen or not. So we're in lockdown again. So
yeah, we're always just waiting for the next variant to ruin things again. I mean, speaking of the pandemic, you said you run a studio. You have your own studio. You run a studio. I mean, in a non-pandemic situation, how complicated is it to run your own studio, or how helpful is it to run your own studio in a non-pandemic sense?
I love having my own space. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just I need a place to go somewhere and work where I can disconnect from everything else, you know, from family responsibilities, from groceries and cooking. And I share a studio with another photographer. We have one photographer part-time. I rent the studio so I can pay the bills. But I love having my own space where I can... whenever I want, I can paint some backdrops, I can build sets, I can test, I can just sit down and edit. So it's my happy place here too, you know.
You're someone that does workshops, you do mentoring, you teach. I mean, obviously managing your own self-doubt and your own trials and things that work and things that don't is always great, because you can pass on the experience of what does and doesn't work. In terms of not just saying, oh, well, if you put this light there, it will look good, because that's not really teaching anyone something. But if you teach them the process that you went through mentally to decide on that process and how you ended up in that position, that's the way you teach people. Okay, so workshops versus teaching someone one-on-one, which one do you prefer and why?
I haven't done a lot of workshops. It's usually just master classes where I just talk about my process and showing how I shoot, how I edit, etc. But there is a workshop that we planned, which didn't happen. So what's the question again? Sorry.
One-to-one versus if you're teaching multiple people at once compared to with just one person, which one do you prefer?
I prefer the group. Awesome. Yeah, okay. Definitely working with the group is a lot, but I keep my groups not more than 10 people. Is usually that's the size of the group. And I don't do, like, to be honest, like I don't do a lot of workshops or master classes or one-on-ones, but I do them every once in a while just because I find it helps me. How do you photograph? Well, I'm just going to grab a camera, go and set up my lights and take pictures. Like there's, and shoot until it looks good. But when you teach, you have to organize your thoughts and okay, how do I do it? Let's break this down. Why I choose this lighting, why I choose this color, why I choose this pose. So it kind of allows me to take a step back from my work and take another look in general of what I do, how I do it, and why I do it.
I think it's helpful as well to evaluate your own decisions after the fact. You can learn about yourself from decisions you've already made, because you might have made them subconsciously. You might not have been thinking, oh, well, when I'm on a shoot, I do this and I do this and I go, but you might have acted instinctively to go back and evaluate. That means you can kind of inform your instincts a little bit better as well, which is really cool.
Yeah. And I try to give as much value as I can. I always think, if I was in a position of the student, would this be any value to me? You know, and it's nice, and I feel like I'm on the stage where I've shot some work that I can back up my what I'm teaching. You know?
So you mentioned earlier about the algorithm working. It's I think it takes some curating. It does take some work. I do spend probably about an hour a week getting rid of things I really don't want to see as much as I can, just because otherwise, if you find yourself clicking on something out of annoyance, they don't know that and they give you more of it. And then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, so it's not particularly great. But in terms of what social media is doing to photography, I guess, and in a wider sense, is it something that you think is positive or negative?
A little bit of both, I think. That's a $1 million question. To me, yeah, it's a little bit of both. But I do find a lot of inspiration on Instagram, scrolling through images. And but yeah, you can very quickly you can catch yourself scrolling for like 2 hours nonstop, you know. And the algorithm, yeah, that's a whole other topic.
And so it's also, I think, a shame where, you know, you can spend, I mean, depending on your definition, you could spend a couple of hours creating an image, or you could spend a lifetime creating it in the way that kind of the Picasso sense of what an artist is. But you could spend a long time creating something and someone will scroll up to it, double tap, and then just scroll straight past it and they won't look further into it. It's kind of a shame that it's making a lot of hard work quite disposable.
Yeah, it's a shame, but I mean, that's what we do to other images as well. Mm. We have to think about social media as a platform to bring us new opportunities. Like, for example, you found me and I'm very pleased about it. I'm not necessarily running an educational platform, so I try not to. There was a point where I didn't post a lot of behind the scenes for like a year or so, because what happens when you post with behind the scenes is some other account will share you and you will get like 100-150 new followers of new photographers who never engage with your posts and only wait for those behind the scenes.
Yep.
You know, but for me, social media is kind of 50-50. It's directed to photographers, but also directed to my potential clients and people who I want to work with. So I tried it to be as neutral as possible, not to post, oh, these are the settings to this picture, you know, because it's really irrelevant.
Yeah.
And if I post behind the scenes, I just want to show what it's like working with me, you know, and how it looks backstage.
Well, this is interesting. So I was going to veer next towards behind the scenes work. And I think I've been saying it for probably about a year now. I'm noticing a trend, and I'm probably I'm very slow. So I've probably missed this completely. And I'm going to say something that everyone knows, but to me, it feels like a revelation that there are photographers that are algorithmically doing well. They are very popular despite maybe not producing particularly fantastic work. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can be here.
Yeah.
But they constantly show behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, you do attract certain people that just want behind the scenes imagery or video or whatever. And to me, it's a very obscure thing. Like if I didn't like the meal, I wouldn't care how it was cooked.
Yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. When behind the scenes picture looks better than the final image, then
right.
It's a big problem there.
Because it's a double-edged sword, really. Because like you said, you could certainly increase your audience number
mm-hmm.
by pushing the behind the scenes stuff to the nth degree, but you're maybe not attracting the right people. So is it about finding a balance?
A lot of times when I do photo shoots, like I can't even remember taking behind the scenes. Like very often I do photo shoot, I'm like, oh, I didn't take a single behind the scenes, you know? And if it's not on social, it didn't happen, you know? If you don't have behind the scenes, it never happened. So sometimes I have to like repost whatever makeup artist posted or anything. So just the reality, when you have a real photo shoot, you don't have time to take good behind the scenes pictures. And when it's like all perfectly staged to show behind the scenes, I mean, you always, okay, this photo shoot was just to show behind the scenes, not the final image wasn't the goal, you know, here.
Well, we definitely have one photographer in England that I won't name because I don't want to get into any kind of issue, but it drives me mad. His stuff is shared constantly and it's always like behind the scenes stuff. And it's just, I find it, I think I just don't have everything I need upstairs mentally to understand why you would want to follow just what someone's doing behind the scenes and not the images that they're creating. It seems like a very weird dynamic.
Yeah. And, I mean, just scroll past it and that's it, really. So yeah, there's people who are interested in it, but I'm more interested, like following photographers that I like, mm-hmm. and waiting for that precious behind the scenes that sometimes they will post or a video, and you can just pause a video. Okay, how the hell did he like this?
So in terms of photographers that you're following, or you know, the progress of their work, or that have inspired you, is there any names that jump out that have really meant a lot to you?
Oh yeah, like I mean, I'm very, my tastes are very conservative. Like name a few, like Irvin Olaf, like I said, Patrick de Marchelier, Mark Seliger, Vincent Peters for his like black and white work. It's amazing. Like for portrait work, like celebrity John Russo, mm-hmm. Jason Bell,
yeah,
from UK, amazing.
You always have to say one from the country of the person that's asking the question. It makes us feel better.
No, I follow him. Like, he's an amazing photographer.
And do you find the influence outside of just looking at photographers' work or looking at photography in general? Do you watch movies and find influence there?
Yeah, or? Traditional good old movies. When it comes to my ballet work, it's like I photograph a lot of rehearsals and shows. So sometimes I would get inspired by a certain dancer, by a certain choreography or lighting that was used on stage. So that's a huge source of inspiration for me and ideas for what I want to do in my personal work. Following a lot of local dancers and having like very diverse community of dancers here in Montreal is really a huge advantage. So when it comes to finding what you want to photograph and finding your own style, I mean, you have to be where that industry is. You know, if you are in a small city and there's no dancers around, I mean, you can't photograph dancers there. You know, if you want to photograph celebrities, you have to go to Hollywood. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, if you want to photograph ice hockey, you've got to be at the rink.
At least.
Yeah. So, I mean, with respect to Montreal, I don't think I've ever had someone on the podcast who's based in Montreal before. I actually went to Canada for my honeymoon. I'm a huge hockey fan. I'm a huge fan of Canada generally. If I could live in Toronto, I would live in Toronto because I'm a huge Maple Leaf fan.
Ooh.
I know. I'm not going to go into the issue of the rivalry, but as far as the sort of the cultural differences, because I think most people listening to this will be able to figure out that you don't have a French Canadian accent.
No, not even close.
So, in terms of like from an artistic point of view, culturally, how different is Montreal from what you're used to? Is it more of a liberal art community, or is it more difficult to stand out?
I find it's pretty liberal. I mean, I only lived in Montreal for 6 years. Before that, my wife and I, we lived in Moncton, New Brunswick, on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Montreal is it's so diverse, and everybody, I think, can find what they're looking for in the artistic community. The culture wise, mm-hmm. it's quite rich, I find.
I mean, in terms of, I mean, it's difficult because you photograph something that is ability based. Modeling isn't ability based. It's that you can have different reasons to want to photograph someone if you just photograph portraits, right? It could be down to raw materials, their bone structure, or their face, or whatever. It could be that they have much better expression, or they've got a wider range of expression. So for portraits, it's a little bit more, I think, loose. But in terms of, say, with ballet, what is the ideal subject for you in terms of ballet? What's the perfect person? What do they have to do or be to be perfect for you to photograph?
Physical abilities is never on the high list of musts for me. It's number one is the way they present themselves on stage and how they can. I love working with contemporary dancers. They're great at improvisation, and the way that they project their personality so into the camera. So I find a lot of freedom there, a lot of freedom for exploration. You know, you can do a lot of different things. So, for example, if they improvise, you know, and I see a good moment there, a good pose, we can try and repeat that that movement, that routine a few times. And sometimes I follow many on social media, and like after 6 years of living in Montreal, I know a lot of dancers personally, and every once in a while I would invite them to do a personal shoot, like a TEF collaboration. That's number one is that.
I mean, the reverse side of it is, what would be a bad subject for you? Like, what would be a trait that would make the shoot more difficult? Or is there any, I have a personal issue with timekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like an epidemic in England of, like, if you say, oh, we shoot at 2, that means they might get there for 3.
Oh.
Which is, that drives me mad.
Yeah, on the scheduling administration part, I've never had that kind of issue. Like, bad photo shoot would be the opposite of what I just told you. If the dancer can move, you know, can jump, can do splits, but there is nothing in the face and in the eyes, there is nothing else. It's just the ability. Right. And like, okay, what do I do here? You know, I just show you how you can do splits and how you can jump. And so I find, like, there is nothing. There is no room for me to show myself. You know, there is nothing right. I can add to that picture.
It becomes more documentary.
Yeah, exactly. And just every other picture, every other ballet picture that you see, like, on social media.
I mean, so to go from something with huge movement and technical ability, and for the dancers, like the physical difficulty of doing all of what they do, and to then capture it, to get the exact timing right, to get the lighting exactly right, to get the start and end position exactly right, all of that is intense, and there's a lot of moving parts involved. To also photograph something like headshots feels like it's at the complete other end of the scale. It's a very boxed in, restricted way of working. And is it difficult for you to do something like photographing headshots, in the sense of it being much more static, in terms of just difficult for you to enjoy it?
No, I do headshots, and I also enjoy them. I have a separate website just for corporate headshots, you know. I've never noticed that.
It's just, I'm a wedding photographer by nature, and that's like being a war photographer. You know, you're just waiting for the next unexpected event to explode in your face. And when I then photograph something that's very simple and straightforward, I almost wish that there was something exploding, because I'm used to that kind of energy. So I see.
No, like, to me, I find it's like my more static, like headshots, it balances out my other work. So.
Right. Right. I mean, it's good to have balance, right? You got to do the personal work, and then you get the commercial work. It's good.
Yeah, I like a little bit of everything. And I started shooting everything. Like, I started with weddings. Like, I photograph everything I could: weddings, portraits, families, newborns. I did interior design and architecture a little bit, and at the end I do commercial work, portraits and ballet. So
is that process complete, do you think what you're now settled on is what you want to be photographing here on out? Because obviously, if you've changed what you're photographing quite a bit, are you, do you think you've settled on the right things now?
Yeah, that's. I asked myself, like, what's next? Am I gonna photograph this? Am I gonna enjoy photographing this for the rest of my life? Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to focus more, a little bit more on fine art. Printmaking and NFTs are huge, so I'm hoping to dive into that. I would love to do more poster work. My short-term goal is to maybe to photograph a key art for Netflix, for example. This is my dream right now. So yeah, I don't know. I photograph a lot of different things, so I'm very open-minded towards what the future holds.
So for people that haven't done big productions, I think everyone that photographs people starts off you and a person, and you photograph them, and there's no one else there, there's no other opinions, there's no other people in the room, there's no other eyes that you are on your monitor to make sure that they're happy with what you're doing and making their suggestions and so on. I imagine it's great, and it can be taxing in different ways, because like it maybe can kill momentum and can take away a little bit from what you want to do, because you might have a direction you want to go down and they want it to go slightly differently. But at the same time, to have people that are that interested in what you're doing and to have different ideas flying around must be really fun. In the position that you're in right now, and I know that these are always very fluid questions because you only have to have one bad day and it can completely change your opinion the complete opposite. So it's a very fluid thing. But do you prefer the really stripped back productions where it's just like you, the dancer, or the person that you're photographing, and a light? Or do you prefer having lots of people there? Do you prefer the bigger productions?
I prefer bigger. It's very rare that I'm one-on-one with a dancer. There's usually someone there. Like makeup artist is usually pretty much always there. Mm-hmm. One-on-one, not so much, but I prefer when having people around me and working with people, which is very surprising because I'm very quite shy and very reserved person. But when I'm on set, I feel quite free, actually.
Do you think that's because when there's more people there, you are a smaller percentage of the people in the room, whereas when it's just you and a couple of people, you are a bigger part of what's going on physically? Like, you're the same photographer in both senses, but if you have three people in a room, you're 33% of the room. If you have 10 people in the room, you're, 10%. It's a big difference.
I don't know if it really matters to me. To me, it's just about the dynamic. I mean, the more people you have, it's just the energy is very different. The flow of the shoot is very different, and it's more energetic and more dynamic, and I love input from other people, so having extra eyes on a shoot always, like makeup artists can notice like things that I don't pay attention at all, or somebody can give an input or advice. So to me, it's a big help having other like extra set of eyes.
And in that situation, who is it that makes the final call? If you need someone to kind of direct, mm-hmm. Everyone's capable of putting in their thoughts, or they have suggestions or whatnot. But who is it that, in a lot of cases, is the one that's making the decision?
Like on a commercial shoot, like with ballet companies, I shoot tethered. We have a computer screen, we have a big TV screen. So as we shoot, we review the images and I hear what people have to say. But by people, I mean artistic director and the marketing director. Yeah, mm-hmm. So we star them, and at the end of each take, we're like, look at the images. Okay, let's review. So do we got it or not? So if we got it, good, then just take a few more for safety, and moving along.
So if I was to guess, if you said to me that I had to photograph ballet next week, I'd think to myself, okay, so there's lots of movement. I'm going to have to make sure I have a camera that is like super quick, probably going to save me in a lot of situations where it's going to be able to take like 30 photos in a second to save me from not being able to guess the right moment. And I, from reading on your website, you're now a medium format Fuji guy. Is that correct? So it wouldn't be, I think for a lot of people, the go-to thought process would be that wouldn't be the go-to camera because of the speed of it. There's the idea that it would be quite a slow camera.
Okay, let's return to camera. But if you would have a photo shoot next week with a ballet dancer, first I would tell you to go and on Pinterest or somewhere and go and find the images that you like, that you connect to, and have something to show to the dancer to tell them what's required of them. Okay. Dancers like direction. You know, you have to direct them, tell them what you want, how you want them, so they have an idea of what's required of them. And then they can use their talent, their abilities to kind of go in that direction. So you cannot just show up, set your camera, lights, everything's perfect. Okay, go do dance stuff, you know. You have to be very specific, okay, how you want to start. And so that's more important than the camera and the lighting that you use. I've been a medium format user pretty much since 2010 when I started doing photography. My first camera was Phase 1 P30 Plus, and then I upgraded it to Leaf Creator. It's also a medium format 40 megapixel camera. And this year I sold it for GFX 100S, just that as the jobs got more demanding, I needed more versatile camera to be able to shoot everything.
I mean, the images look fantastic, but actually, to go back to what you were saying then, you said, you know, get up the Pinterest board, get up the images and go down that route. And you said that dancers love to be directed. Now, I think for a lot of people, if they were to, for me, I'll speak for myself, I won't speak for anyone else. If I was to go and photograph to try and photograph dancers in the way that you do, maybe not stylistically, but if I was just going to go and try and photograph a dancer in the way that you do, I would be kind of scared to direct because they have the knowledge of what they do and they've got the years and years and years of experience. And for me to not have that, I think I could see that being a stumbling block for photographers. They'd be scared almost to have input on direction. Mm-hmm. So you think the best thing is to direct, do you think it would be a good idea for people to maybe do a bit of research into ballet, or do you think to stick strictly visual?
I would stick strictly visual. I mean, it's just, it would be too complicated to learn the steps and how jumps are, the terminology and all that. It's just going to be way too confusing. I would take the visual route. Okay. This is what I would want. But first thing you have to consider is what kind of dancer you're going to work with. Is it a classical dancer? Is it a ballerina that can stand on point, or is it a more contemporary dancer and that can do improvisation and all that kind of stuff? So that's always, you have to consider the dancer, the style of the dancer that you're working with, and then you can match the images and what you want to do on a photo shoot to that dancer.
So something that I do, and I'm ashamed to admit that I do it, but you see people that work in the same field as you, you look at the work that they do, and sometimes you can see places where they've fallen down a little bit, or you could learn from things that they're doing that you don't think are quite right. Or, you know, I can look at wedding photography and see that they've approached something, and you obviously can't see everything that's happening, so there could be mitigating circumstances, but you see decisions that might have been made by them that you don't think are the right decision, or you don't think is helping their image as much as doing it the way that you would do it, or you would do what they did a different way. Do you spend a lot of time looking at other dance photographers' work in a way to kind of inform what you're doing, or do you feel like you're now at the point where you have it in you as a dancer and a photographer that you kind of know the direction you're going to go in all the time?
I feel like I know I follow a couple of photographers. There is a great photographer in Russia. Her name is Daria Volkova. There is a couple other photographers, and there's one here, and there's one in China, I think. There is not that many like professional photographers doing it full time. But yeah, I don't draw my inspiration from other ballet photographers. I think I have an idea of the way I want my images to look. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just interesting. It's people take it as a. I think you can learn from the mistakes of other people without it being spiteful or rude or hurtful. It's like you're not saying someone else is bad for doing something a certain way. It's just, I think you can. I look at the approach of British wedding photography in particular is terrible. It's really terrible. It's very catered. You get paid by a couple and then you spend your entire, and I'm not talking about me, but you spend your entire day trying to impress like the venue and then every other person that's contributing because you can network with them. And by networking with them, you get more money. So the image is always a sales piece for other people at the wedding, feels like for everybody except for the couple. It's a very British wedding photography thing. They're very stagnant images that are just there to sell a product. And that's not what the purpose of the image is at all. And it's a bit of a shame. So it's not like I'm saying, I mean, I guess I am saying they're bad and I'm kind of going back on myself a little bit.
Yeah, but, the way it sounds.
But you have, I probably don't network as well as I could by not doing things that way. But at the same time, I feel like the images that I produce are truer to what I feel like I should be doing.
And that's what should be more important to you rather than what other photographers are doing. So
yeah,
I try not to care much. Like, okay, so that's the decision they made. So that's fine with me. I just don't care what other people are doing.
No.
So that's it.
And I think you can go down a bit of a rabbit hole of being annoyed at other people that don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Like why? Like why do I want to do this to myself, right?
I think that's definitely a European thing. We like to be angry at each other. That's how we coexist. So I've asked this before several times and I'm absolutely not going to understand the answer in this particular case, but I'm going to be very curious anyway. People that photograph people, it's an interesting dynamic because the technicality of it is a lot less important than the way that you get on with the person that you're photographing. I think if you don't have the right relationship when you're photographing someone, if you're not clicking, if you're not getting on, I think it can show up in photographs quite severely, no matter how good the technical aspects of the camera and the lighting and so on. Like you said about when you have a dancer that has nothing behind the eyes, they're not expressive. I think it shows. What do you do to build that rapport with the subject? Do you take a lot of time before you shoot to have a conversation with them, or how does it work for you?
We're talking about dancers or just
anyone that you have to photograph.
If you're talking just about like portrait shoot and portrait clients, people who I've never met before and only met them on a shoot day. Building that report, it's also, that's what's going to be reflected in your style, the style of your portrait. I think the way you behave from the moment the person came in to your studio will kind of set the ground to your, of how your images, the dynamic of your portrait and what the pictures convey. We know how Annie Leibovitz is often criticized by amateur photographers that she doesn't do anything, only her assistant set up the lighting and do all that technical stuff. But while she's sitting with the talent and just chatting, you know, building that report. So she's you could be talking about very different things, but it's just about breaking the ice and building that report with the person, you know, so that when you get to the shooting, you can focus on the shooting. So you, and I think that report, like you said, is crucial to how your portrait is going to look. Mm-hmm. The way I do it, I just try to be authentic as much as possible. You know, I'm not there to entertain. Just ask questions. I think that's the best part. The best advice that I can take: just ask questions, let them talk. Especially if you see that they're nervous. Usually, asking questions about what they do will put them a little bit more at ease.
Have you ever thought about taking, for example, like the I actually don't have the name. I want to make sure that I say. Let me make sure I get this exactly right so that I'm referencing the right thing and we're talking to each other on the right language. Otherwise, I'm going to make a complete fool of myself and reference something. And that's the last thing I want to do. On your website, under projects. So you did a series of images of, I'm assuming a ballet production, of like a portrait of the ballet performer and a shot of them dancing.
Oh yeah. It's not really a project. It's those images were for Le Grand Ballet de Montréal. They are in dance portraits in projects all the way down.
I was in the right place. I had the right part of the website. Yeah. So if we take something like the dance portraits, it's under projects. So I'll just say projects. Yeah. If we take something like that, you've got the portrait of the person and then a performance shot of a particular dance move. That to me was the sticking point. So I saw the images on Instagram. The first thing I do is I then find you, your actual profile on Instagram, and then I go to a website because I want to look at images properly. I don't want to look at them on a little square with a bit of text. I want to look at them properly. And This was the part of your website that was the sticking point for me where I was really drawn in because I loved the idea of showing the movement and the person as like a diptych, as like a two-part image. Is that something that you would ever consider doing as like a book or have you ever considered doing something like a self-published book of some of your work or a particular project?
Yeah, maybe one day. Yeah, book is definitely something I would like to do. Let's say it's a five year goal. but it involves doing a lot more personal work. All this is commission work. Mm-hmm. Every year I do new headshots for new dancers, and we do one performance shot of what they do. And it's just for my website, I decided to put them side by side. I think it was an interesting.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I really like it. I think I really like, I've seen fashion photographers photograph ballet mm-hmm. previously. And it's like quite often it would be like the big infinity curve. And there would be like, it wouldn't be high key, it would be low key, but it'd be on an infinity curve. It would be, the shadow would play a big part in what's happening more than the light in a lot of sense, because it gives the definition and so on. But to have it side by side with the picture of the individual as a headshot, I just think is a really interesting dynamic. And I think I basically have an obsession with photo books. And I think that printed images are so fantastic, especially in a book form. I don't feel like, I think the hardest thing you can ask a photographer to do is if I asked you to show me one image that summed up you as a photographer, I think that would be something that almost all photographers would struggle with. And that's why I really like the idea of combining images in terms of creating a body of work in small projects, as opposed to here's one image that can cover everything. I don't think that works. And I'd love to see, you're a photographer, I'd love to see a photo book produce. I mean, you've already sold one, let's put it that way.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'll ask you this, I appreciate your time and I don't want to keep you too long.
That's fine.
I've asked this question a lot and it's starting to become a bit of a mixed bag. Sometimes people have an answer straight away. Quite a lot of the time people can't think of an answer at all, or they're too scared to give an answer, I'm not sure. But if you could pick one person to be a subject for you, whether it be ballet, portrait, headshot, whatever you want to do. But if you could pick one person to photograph, who would the one person you would pick be?
I heard this question in your other podcast, and I actually, yeah, was thinking. I don't have one person. I'd say, if I could name a few, I could name a few.
I'll let you name a few.
But I name a few. So for men, I would love to photograph Clint Eastwood just for his features and for his character. For women, maybe from celebrities, Charlize Theron. I think she's amazing. Like, she's a former model. She's a great actress. Who else did I think of? I don't know. I don't know, man.
I mean, Clint Eastwood and Charlize Theron is pretty good. That's a pretty good answer. I think the first time I ever asked the question on the podcast, the response was probably Donald Trump, which I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting of all the people that you could photograph. And they basically said that if they photographed Donald Trump, the pictures would be on the internet so much that it would create, it would create infamy. And I was like, okay, that's an interesting approach. I don't know if I'd use my one, like if you said to me, I can only photograph one person ever again, Yeah, an interesting approach. Everyone has an interesting tactic.
But I'm more thinking of an experience I would have with a person, not just, okay, show up for 5 minutes, click, and go. We're talking about like a
full-on
session.
Yeah,
at least 15 minutes.
That's a long celebrity shoot these days, I think.
Yeah.
No, it's been amazing to talk to you, and I really appreciate it. And I do apologize. I come in with such a lack of knowledge of ballet, but it's always interesting to hear.
Well, that's great. The questions were great. Like, they're better than usual questions I get asked.
Well, I mean, I try my best to not sound stupid. That just every episode, all I'm doing is trying to not sound as stupid as what I actually am.
Mission accomplished. You were very smart.
Thank you very much. So obviously we've talked about the algorithm, and I'm doing my best to become an algorithm and get people to like things that I like so that there's more of that in the world and then less of TikTok and people pulling pranks on their friends that are obviously fake and other terrible things. So as far as the point of this podcast entirely is for people to find your work, I want to help as many people as possible find your fantastic photography. So where's the best place for people to go to see your work?
Instagram and my website. My name, Sasha Onyshenko at .com. And my, search for my name on Instagram, or my handle is Kravitz Photographics.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chris.